Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We're on a search for healing and curing, and I'm wondering, listeners, how you're doing with it. When you give yourself Reiki, either in the morning or in the evening, whenever you do your self-treatment, do you feel like you're on a part of a healing path, or are you trying to cure something? One of the interesting things that has happened for me is that quite often when I'm not trying to cure something, things seem to just disappear. And when I'm trying to heal them, things just don't seem to be moving. It's an interesting process. And of course, I think we all have experienced the miracle of Reiki. Like if we have a burn from cooking, and we immediately put our hand on, and a few minutes later we take our hand off and there's no mark or anything, and we know that if we had not had Reiki, we would have had a mark, a blister, or maybe even a scar. So that's curing as far as I'm concerned, or maybe it's just reversing process. Who knows? We're going to talk again today to Sadhu, who is a master, lives in Moscow. And I think 3 years ago or something, I did a wonderful interview with her on Mystic Order. And I'm back again in Moscow, and I have the wonderful privilege to have Sadhu on the show again. Sadhu, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you. Can you just give us a little summary of your story and of how you got into Reiki?
Oh, yes. I was flying to India to Osho Rajneesh Ashram together with one lady from Russia. And that was my very first trip abroad. And on our way in the plane, we sat close to each other, and she was telling me all kinds of stories about healing, all kinds of miraculous stories. Like she said, she kept giving Reiki treatments to one man who had cancer, and she said he had felt much better and was quite well, and she had had the last degree of cancer. And I was so astonished, shocked, that I wanted to know more about it. And she was a first degree student. And that was in 1990, in winter. And when I got to India, I wanted to get suntanned, and I was burnt all over and was as red as beets. And she said, okay, shall I give you Reiki? And she asked me to lie down. She sat close to me. I closed my eyes and I was switched off in a moment. But before I was switched off, I had experienced something very strange, as if electricity were flowing through my whole body. And I thought that was amazing. And as soon as I opened my eyes, like in a click of a moment, I saw her sitting just thanking the universe for the healing and for the light. And then I turned to her and I said, isn't that great? I want to learn from you. Please teach me this art. And she said, I have only the first degree. And I said, I don't care which degree you have, your level of knowledge is perfect for me. Please teach me that. She said her Reiki master was coming to Moscow in a couple of months, and I had a 3-month visa, so when he would come, I would be still in India. And I was so sorry about it that I was about to change my tickets and fly home earlier. But she said I didn't need to worry because his friend Fokker Brink was coming pretty soon. So that master from Germany came only once and never came back again. I'm very happy that I was in Fokker's class. And in his very first class in Moscow, I was both his student and his interpreter, together with my very good friend Yelena Znamenska.
Mm-hmm.
And what my most shocking experience was that we were renting, the organizers at that time were renting a kind of a hall for some kind of physical training exercises,
mm-hmm.
in a polyclinic, in a local polyclinic.
Mm-hmm.
And the hall as such was okay, and there was only one tiny room adjusting that place, and it was a bathroom with showers and a toilet, but I hadn't known about it before I entered it. When I was invited into that room, you might laugh, I was in some holy temple or a cave, and it was so fantastic because it was full of the same energy that I felt in holy places and temples and churches. There were some candles burning, the portraits of the grandmasters, some kind of a table covered with a beautiful cloth, chairs. I sat there. I was in such a state of bliss, and then I felt that energy. And I thought that man must have been a kind of a wizard or whoever to radiate that light.
Wonderful.
And I went there for the first initiation, then on the next day the second, the third, etc. And on the very last day, the organizer asked me, since I was one of the last people to leave that place, to please help her put everything in order, some kind of benches, tables, whatever. I started moving some furniture, and then I just wanted to come to that holy place to have a look at it. And lo and behold, it was that bathroom. You know, it's like from some science fiction movies.
Right.
Like, you open the door to your apartment and there is some other dimension there,
right.
Or another planet, you know. So, and I thought, well, if someone can turn this place into a holy temple, well, that's something to really think about.
Yes.
Can't this energy do miracles? Can't people who embody it and radiate,
uh-huh.
it in this world, do fantastic things,
mm-hmm.
how
mm-hmm.
I would love to be among them.
Mm-hmm.
Something
mm-hmm.
like this.
Mm, beautiful. And there you were among them.
Yes, right. I was
very
lucky.
It's a wonderful
lucky.
Story. And good for Fokker that he was able to just carry on like it was totally normal.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. And then, how did you proceed from there? You just started giving Reiki treatments?
Yes,
and...
right. I remember that after having given myself Reiki treatments daily and being very much involved
mm-hmm.
in this practice, I was going somewhere with one of my Reiki friends, and it was very cold. It was winter already. Because I got to my first Reiki class in the summer of 1990. And
mm-hmm.
I was going somewhere, it was already very cold, we were wearing fur coats. And I suddenly put my hands on myself and felt this energy of Reiki through this thick fur.
Mm.
And then I thought, wow. And then I turned to my Reiki friend and said, do you feel the same? She said, yes. Do you think it will last forever? How long do you think it might last? No idea, I said. I wish it could last forever.
Now what's your
yes.
answer? Is it going to last forever,
yes.
Sadhu?
I believe so. And that's good news. You
that's
know?
The good news.
Yes.
Amazing. Wonderful.
Then, little by little, things went on, and then in 1991 I got my second degree. It was another amazing experience that really was so much so much shocking. I can't even find the word, but really amazing. When I was in that second degree class, and I just saw this symbol of Reiki drawn by Foka on a sheet of paper with that real Japanese ink and the brush. It was like bombs. I was just looking at it, and looking, it produced some kind of very strong impression on me. Also, like the embodiment of energy. I could neither express it in words. Nor understand. But then I also had an idea that if something drawn on a sheet of paper can be the embodiment of the energy, and really be some sacred partner that can be like a doorway or a key that might open a doorway into something mysterious and unknown, it could really change my life and the life of some other people. And I felt so happy, so blessed, so lucky. And then everything else followed. And then I was given the assignment to practice drawing that.
Right.
So I went somewhere and it was snowing. And then I started drawing that in the snow. And the snow was falling. And then all of a sudden I was full of awe, of fear. What if I draw something wrong? What might happen? There is no one around. I had such an attitude to these symbols as if they were the keys to operate some magic computer of the universe.
That is a wonderful image.
Yeah. So, and then that journey continued till the moment I became Focus Master Candidate, and then I was initiated as a Reiki Master in 1994.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And then it continues and goes on and on.
Great.
And I'm very happy about that.
Yes, wonderful. And here we are. So in your years of being a student, did you were you calling what you did a healing art, or was it healing for you?
Yes.
Or did you talk about healing and curing during that time, or was it just healing?
It was rather early that I understood that it wasn't me who was doing the work. Maybe from the very beginning. That I was someone who was just like God's hands in a certain place. Or just some specific point in the universe through which the light of something bigger and greater could shine and do its work. So I understood quite early that my business was just to hold hands on someone. And all the other things were none of my business. And that was what I openly told people.
Yes?
Yes.
Wonderful.
And I said, you know, I have no idea what's going to happen, whether you're going to feel better as soon as I put my hands on you, or whether things won't seem too dramatic, or whether nothing might seem to change at all, or whether you would have some idea that things become too tough. But I know that over there, and I pointed to the heaven, they never make mistakes. Mm. I can make mistakes as a human being, but they never do. So whatever they give as support is only supportive and is absolutely correct and mm-hmm. right. And that's exactly what you need at this particular moment of your life as the best possible support.
Mm-hmm.
And as much love and light and bliss and grace can be given to you, mm-hmm. As you might need to be absolutely happy whatever happens, or mm-hmm. to go through whatever you are mm-hmm. going through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to you to take as much as you can hold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can never empty that reservoir, because it's not possible for a human being to drink the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So it's endless.
Mm-hmm.
And the grace and love of this source is endless, and it's a big privilege to be in that closeness and contact with this
mm-hmm.
source.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm there to serve you as this kind of point in the universe,
mm-hmm.
These hands.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to you what you want and how much you want it. And, if you want that more than I am able to give as a human being, because I have my human limits, there are lots of other Reiki practitioners. I can give you their phone calls,
uh-huh.
and we shall figure it out what we can do to give you the maximum support you want in this situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, little by little, I began to realize one very important difference between Reiki and some other methods of healing. And when you started talking about the four aspects of the discipline,
mm-hmm.
The first one of the four being a healing system.
Healing practice.
A healing practice, yes.
Right.
I started wondering, what is the place of this particular healing practice that we call Reiki or Suishi Kiryoha among all the other healing practices that exist in the world nowadays or existed in the past?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I started looking around me, and very soon I found a kind of the class to which we could possibly belong, and that's spiritual healing.
Hmm.
The closest analogy that I could find in my own culture was the healing that they do in some villages in Siberia or in many other places in Russia, when somebody who is a Christian would say or pronounce some prayers over some water.
Uh-huh.
Say in the name of Father God, Son God, and the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Make a cross. Give with a hand. Give this water for someone to drink. And in many cases, people got better. Or when they prayed in the church for someone, and that person could probably get better.
Wow.
Then I started thinking, well, for example, let's suppose the mother of some man who is a Christian gets very sick and is in a hospital, and she is a Christian and that man is a Christian. And the doctors say, well, her situation is very bad because that's a very bad stroke or something like this.
Mm-hmm.
She might not survive, or if she survives, she might be handicapped. Well, we are doing our best, let's see. And that man goes to the church, he prays, then he orders some services, then he asks the whole group of his friends to pray for his mother, maybe 20 people, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, he goes to his room, he lights some candles, he stands in front of an icon, he prays till 6 o'clock in the morning, and then he comes next day to the hospital, and He might be told that his mother is much better and all the doctors have big eyes and they are just shocked.
Right.
And she recovers very quickly and lives happily ever after. Can he say, I'm such a wonderful healer, I can heal everybody with this particular kind of a stroke by 6 hours of prayers and ordering some services in a mm-hmm. church? And if right. we are 20, that's 100% guarantee of success. Mm-hmm. No, that's too big pride. And what is pride? When we take something that God does on our own shoulders and think that it's us who does it.
Mm-hmm.
And the fruit isn't his.
Right.
So, if he comes to that hospital the next day and the doctors say, most unfortunately, your mother died a few hours ago,
mm-hmm.
can he say, I'm a bad healer, I harmed her or healed her by means of my prayers? Sure right. not.
Right, right.
Absolutely not.
Right.
So,
well, that's a good point.
Yes. If he feels guilt or bad about not having helped her enough or whatever, that's the opposite of pride, but it's the same pride, the same ego with a different sign, like in mathematics, not plus but minus.
Right.
So, if one says, dear friends, you have supported me and my mother in the most difficult situation that we had up to now by praying for her. And if something happens to any of you or your family, I'm open to pray for you as much as you have prayed for my mother and mm-hmm. even more. That's mm-hmm. not pride, and it's very appropriate. Why? Because the only thing for which we can really be responsible is the thing that is our own input. And that's our openness to practice, mm-hmm. our sincerity, and our willingness to allow the universe to act through us
mm-hmm.
and to embody it, to embody this light or this energy.
Mm.
And that's the only thing we can be responsible for, and the only thing we can actually promise.
Mm.
So, if someone telephones and says, you know, my dog is dying, I can never promise anyone I can cure it or mm-hmm. That it will be better. I can only promise, yes, I can give her Reiki for 2 hours tonight. And if you want more Reiki, you can telephone another friend mm-hmm. and she will mm-hmm. come mm-hmm. after me. And that's the only thing we can promise. Like, be together with this dog in the situation mm-hmm. it is in.
Right, right.
And that's the only thing. If it dies, it's none of our fault. If it survives and gets healed and lives happily many years after that, it's none of our merit. It's not us.
Right.
And if we are humble enough to be like that and open enough to be God's instrument, things are never getting upside down or worse. And if mm-hmm. we are openly saying that to people who are not used to spiritual healing in our culture,
mm-hmm. that's true.
That makes things very, very easy. And people do have the right attitude to this practice and the right expectations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I usually say that in whatever situations people and animals are, I can support them by practicing Reiki, mm-hmm. and other people whom I know can support them just the same way.
Mm-hmm.
We're not promising anything, and it's up to other people to decide what amount of such support they need, if any.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Very good point.
So, if someone says, how many sessions do I need? I'm ill with whatever, God knows what, for me to get better. Mm-hmm. I believe that the question, the way it's answered, is inappropriate. The first thing I tell this person that I have no idea how many sessions. It's up to you to decide right. how many sessions you want, and we shall see if I can satisfy your thirst for that.
Right.
If you don't know yet, I can give you a session and you will see if you want the support or not.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not promising you're going to get better in mundane terms of this world.
Right.
But it will be support anyway, but mm-hmm. we never know what.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, some people come to me with certain expectations, like, you know, my husband has left me. I can say I'm very sorry. Can you give me some Reiki for him to come back to me?
Right.
I can say, well, I can give you Reiki in this situation as long as you feel you need it in this situation. And I have no idea whether your husband is going to come back or not. It's his choice, and that's your choice whether to let him come back or not.
Right, exactly.
So, and Reiki can support you anyway.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah. There are other situations when I know for sure that someone is going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, because of my own immaturity, I was rather scared of working with such people or animals, because I'm a very compassionate person, and I was afraid that it would be too much for me to witness the process.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then I thought I had to be strong enough and mature enough to be able to render support in these situations. And right now, I do not refuse to give Reiki to dying people or animals, and to do it as much as this support is wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And if they pass away, they pass away. I believe it's great support anyway.
Mm-hmm.
If they survive, they survive. And I am not the person to decide what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not up to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great weight off my shoulders. I know that I can never harm. I know mm-hmm. that whatever happens, I can be near, radiating this light by the grace of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
That nothing really depends on me, and that's why this cannot harm. Because mm-hmm. people can be mistaken. They can make a wrong diagnosis. They can give some wrong method of dealing with this mm-hmm. situation mm-hmm. or treatment. They do something. They make a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
They want to find the way to deal with such
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be good enough to do something in this situation. They need some kind of training. And then if they succeed, they are good doctors, they are good healers.
Mm-hmm.
And if they fail, then it means they are bad healers or bad doctors, and it's because of them. But if the upper floor, let's put it like this, is invited to do the whole work and I'm only the hands, what depends on me is the quality of this being an instrument
mm-hmm.
in God's hands.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do to be a better instrument?
Mm-hmm.
That depends on my trust in this upper floor, let's put it like this,
mm-hmm.
in this source of this energy. In my trust that I can be a good instrument or good hands the way I am.
Mm-hmm.
My trust that everything can be given into these hands, whatever I can think of, and
mm-hmm.
That's the best way to handle a certain situation.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's amazing. Thank you. Yeah. That's wonderful, and it's a very, very good point to remember that
mm-hmm.
We're not in control.
Right.
And
I can relax because of that. Yeah. And just allow the energy to flow through me into mm-hmm. the world.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So, at some point, I've had discussions, especially among people who speak Russian, the Russian language,
mm-hmm.
about healing and curing. And, you know, in each language, I think there's some nuances
right.
that happen in the words. And I'm just
sure.
wondering, I know that you did a little research on
yes.
healing and curing in
I
your
did.
Language.
Can I you, did. Sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you share that with us?
Of course. If one looks up the word to cure, in the dictionary, they give several meanings, and one of them is исцелять. Лечить, исцелять. If one looks up the word heal, to heal, they also give исцелять, лечить, заживлять, etc. So they are practically absolute synonyms, if I believe the dictionary. But on some level, I feel that they are not absolute synonyms, and then there is some kind of difference in the set of meaning which the dictionary doesn't show, the one that
uh-huh.
I used.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So I would say that Reiki is a healing system, that it's spiritual healing,
mm-hmm.
and that I can heal people using this method by being God's hands at
mm-hmm.
that particular moment,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
or opening myself to being God's hands, like,
mm-hmm.
dear Lord, come and shine in me, and may your light fill me and stream into the world, and may my hands be yours, and may I be your hands, and please do your work that you think appropriate in the place where I'm putting them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's healing. But to cure for me means to make things be right from our point of view, to fix something. And healing in this from this perspective doesn't necessarily mean curing something. Things might not or never get right from our mundane human point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Just behind all these discussions, there might be a certain point. I believe that many people are afraid of change. They are afraid of change just because they are attached to many things the way they are. Many people are attached to their physical bodies,
mm-hmm.
and many people are attached to many other things
mm-hmm.
with which they identify themselves. Their position in society, their title, their role that they are playing, their rank, their profession, their ideas, all their knowledge that they have accumulated by means of education,
mm-hmm.
their car, their house, their property at large, their income, etc., you know, their jewelry. And of course, they are attached to people, they have certain relationships, they are attached to their doggies, to their beloved ones, to whatever. And in case something gets wrong with our body, we have to let go of all that, not just of our physical body.
Right.
And travel God knows where. So people are very reluctant to move at least one step from the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And they want things the way they want it because of their fear of the unknown, or because of their attachments or their identification with something which lies on the surface, but which changes anyway, whether they want it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as by means of their practice, whatever spiritual practice it is, they get experience of something that never changes and is eternal. And the experience that it's not far away, but it's right here.
Right.
This fear of letting go of things starts diminishing, starts dissolving. And then they can look at things from a little bit different perspectives and really be open to whatever this energy is bringing us to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they can totally surrender. As soon as, unless they get this experience, they can hardly surrender and they can hardly let go
right.
of things. And then they look at healing as a method of curing.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And there is nothing to do about it but tell them practice anyway. Miracles happen. You can never harm anybody by doing that. And what if it helps?
Right.
And it's a very good argument.
Uh-huh.
And people aren't open to anything else
uh-huh.
at this point.
Mm-hmm,
on
mm-hmm.
On this stage of their journey.
So would you call this a kind of all or nothing thing? Like the way that people are, attached.
Right.
So they have all.
Yes.
Or they have nothing.
Right.
And so if they, if there's something going on in their body
mm-hmm.
that they want to change, it's kind of an all or nothing. They
right.
want everything or they want nothing, so
yeah.
they want it to be gone completely.
Yes, right. Or they just say, all right, please, dear Lord, give us this. May the temperature fall down. May this pain disappear. May, etc. Mrs. Takata said, Takata-sensei said, don't teach God how to do his business. I think, was it Fokker who told me that, or I don't know where I got this quotation from, maybe from one of the books, either by Frank Brown or
it's possible,
by
yeah.
Elena Heberle. But yes, people have a tendency to tell God how to
right.
do his business, you know,
right.
and it's none of our business. and it's very interesting that at some point I see that people who have been practicing Reiki for many, many years as their life task, perhaps, with total commitment, surrender to this energy and to this practice to such an extent that they do miraculous things in terms of letting go.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very courageous.
Thing. Yes. And it's this practice and this very intimate relationship with the energy that gives them this courage. Once we had a Reiki circle here, and, it was quite some long time ago. And one of the Reiki masters said, you know, I've recently gone through such a crisis or such an important thing. She went to a certain place to have some regular checkup by the doctors. And they said she had breast cancer and needed some urgent surgery and chemotherapy. And the surgeon, who was her friend and whom she trusted, said he was going on a holiday to Turkey and with his family and wouldn't cancel his flight there because of her condition. And he would come back in a month and it could be probably too late. She needed to have that operation urgently, etc. And she just signed some papers that the doctors weren't responsible for anything, and she refused to have that operation. She wanted to let Reiki have some chance, and she wanted that particular doctor to operate on her.
Right.
So, she thought, I have 1 month's time. What haven't I done enough?
Uh-huh.
I give myself regular self-treatments. I treat other people. Maybe that's not enough. So, what if I keep my hands on my breast not for 5 minutes, but for 5 hours?
Yes.
What if I really live the Reiki precepts? And she started looking at them from some very, very different point of view than she had done before.
Mm-hmm.
She would use a certain method. She would sit on a chair like during the ritual of initiation, put her hands up, invite the flow of energy to come into her, and repeat one precept after another very slowly, looking at all the reactions in her body and all the inner response, all the feelings that come up. And there would be some voice saying, "Oh, just for today you do not worry. Aren't you lying? You worry about this, you worry about that, you are worrying about this and that." And then she said, "Okay, queue up. One at a time, please." And then she said, "Oh, please, this divine energy, take into your divine hands this problem of mine or this wound of mine, heal this wound of mine so that I could follow this precept 100%. And there were less and less and less things coming up. The same with I don't anger, the same with other things. All her relationship with her parents, with her relatives who were elders, with other people, they all like popped up.
That's amazing.
On the surface, other things. And at one point, after many, many hours of such practice, she was sitting like a flow of light, and there wouldn't be a single thought that would contradict the statement at that particular moment. And then all of a sudden, she found herself saying, "Dear Lord, if you want me in another body or in another form, in another place in the universe, it's up to you. That means that not only I am going to be happy, but everyone else, because you never make mistakes. If you want me in a different place, I totally surrender and go. Do it the way you want to do it. I just follow. Lead me, I am following. If you want me to stay in this body, for some reason, allow me to stay in this body and be your good hands here. And if you leave me here, I can do." And then she started making vows. Like, "I can do this for you, I can do that for you, I can do also this and that for you."
Wow.
And there was such a flow of energy that she had a feeling all her disease burnt up like this. Then she continued practicing, giving herself Reiki. In 1 month's time, the doctor came. He couldn't see her at once, some more time passed. Then she showed up at last. He said, "Well, before that operation, I want to make some tests again, because things might be very different. Mm-hmm. You could have other tumors in other places, etc." Not a single tumor was found. All her analyses were perfect. That thing in her breast got smaller, and disappeared. She didn't have that operation, and she didn't have that diagnosis. But it was cured. It was some miraculous healing. Did she do it? No. What did she do? She did a lot. She didn't heal herself. She didn't cure herself. It wasn't her. She practiced. And that's the best we can do. Uh-huh. And the level of our commitment, the level of our devotion to this source, the level of our openness to move wherever this light is bringing us, depends on the years of practice, on our openness, and sometimes on our situation, which isn't the one that we might really love to be in.
Yes.
So,
that's a marvelous story of healing and curing.
Right. And in this practice, these things often happen in exactly the same mm-hmm. way, and I know mm-hmm. other stories. Someone asked in one of my first degree Reiki classes, Is it possible to give Reiki to cancer patients, and is there any hope or something? And before I could open my mouth and answer, one of my guests, so-called guests, the ones who have already been practicing a lot, who was sitting there, said, "Can I answer? Can I answer?" I said, "Well, you're welcome." And she shared a story of how her mother passed away, had passed away, and how she had been giving her Reiki all the time, and at the moment of her passing away. And she said that was the most important experience for her in her life, and she believed that was the most important experience of her mother in all her life. And their relationship had changed absolutely. Their relationship had been healed. There was such love among them, between them, and there was such closeness, maybe the deepest closeness that is possible, oneness in God. One, like, I am light, you are light, we are light, and there is no distance between us, like between a wave of light and a wave of light. And in that flow of light, she passed away, and there wasn't that much pain as usual, either with her or in her daughter, like emotional pain. And it was such a blissful kind of experience. So she said, "For sure you should do it, if you have some kind of a relative with that problem." And I just said, "Thank you," and that was it. Maybe I added a couple of sentences. So we never know what happens, but it's we are blessed to have this kind of tool in our hands to support us in whatever situation.
I agree.
Yeah.
I love listening to you talk about it because it's so, I don't know, it's from a very different standpoint. I'm not used to having this sort of combined with the energy of God so closely, and it's a beautiful thing, and it really is true for me.
Thank you.
I don't talk about it like that. It's not my language.
I see.
And it's wonderful to hear the language, because I think it's very accurate and also allows a kind of understanding that wouldn't ordinarily perhaps happen. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, you have such great stories. Do you have another story that you pops up into your mind?
About healing and curing.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot. It was an interesting situation that happened once in my life. And Reiki helped my daughter to survive and to be born.
Really?
Yeah. The thing was that I decided to practice Aikido, and there was an Aikido school not far from the place where I lived, and when I went there, the sensei there was a person who had a sensei in Japan. She had some high dan and was a very famous person. And it was a real martial art. It wasn't Aikido.
No.
It was just fighting. And she taught us how to fall down, how to do other things. And thanks God, I fell down in a wrong way and injured myself, because otherwise things could have been much worse. I hadn't been aware before I found it out that I was pregnant.
Oh.
So, being pregnant, they were throwing me everywhere. So, that was the first nice gift of the universe, that I couldn't go there anymore.
Was it nice that you didn't have to go there anymore?
Yes, yeah. Nice for the baby.
Nice for the baby, uh-huh.
So, of course, I invited all kinds of people to give me Reiki treatments.
Uh-huh.
And one of them was a Reiki practitioner who before coming to Reiki had been a magician or a or practicing bioenergetics.
Uh-huh.
She came to me and she was a kind of clairvoyant and she put her hands on me and then she said, you know, your trauma is just nothing. It will heal.
Right.
You are having a tumor in your womb which is growing very quickly and it's only cancer tumors that can grow so quickly. You should go to my friend who is an oncologist and a gynecologist and a doctor in a certain hospital. She gave me her telephone number. I said, okay. I telephoned her. I came there. I was late because I had lost my way. That was another gift of the universe. She didn't really look at me carefully. And she said, the operation must take place tomorrow and it costs $500. Well, I said, no analysis, no real checking up, nothing. I went home, I placed myself between my hands and something felt very wrong. And there was a kind of a voice inside me, phone a certain person who was a friend of my husband. And he is a homeopathic doctor.
Uh-huh.
So I phoned him. He said, are you bleeding now? Because the doctors in that hospital said, the bleeding can start at any moment and we won't save you. There won't be enough time to bring you to the hospital then.
Uh-huh.
You shouldn't wait, etc. So, is there any bleeding now? No, I said. Can you come to my place? I said, yes. At 10 tomorrow? Yes, I said. I telephoned that lady, that surgeon, saying, no, I'm not coming to that operation. I went to that homeopathic doctor. He talked for 1 hour with me. He gave me some homeopathic medications. I started taking them. And then 1 week later, he said, I gave myself a lot of Reiki all the time. And then 1 week later, he said, I needed another checkup. And I was reluctant to go to the same doctor. I found another one. When I got there, she said, well, it's no less than the fourth month of pregnancy. What? I said. They made some ultrasound tests. They said, we can't tell you whether that's a boy or a girl yet. And because the baby is lying in such a position that it's not visible. Then I telephoned that clairvoyant lady saying, you know, good news.
There's one other possibility.
Yes, you know, yes. If everything's going to be okay, then perhaps, 6 months later, your cancer tumor is going to ask for milk. Thanks God, you know, I was like very surrendering, like, dear Lord, whatever you want to do with me.
Right.
Might be the best. If you give me this experience, I wonder what lesson there is, etc.
Uh-huh.
What do you want me to do in this situation?
That's a beautiful story.
And since then, I've been telling at many first degree classes that, of course, you feel something.
Mm-hmm.
You surely might feel something or have some sensations mm-hmm. or visions mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. images. That's the fact. And then there comes the interpretation of that fact.
Right.
And these things are different. At least right. in our healing system called yes. Reiki, it's different.
Yes.
So you can always share fact to the degree you feel appropriate
mm-hmm.
and leave your interpretations to yourself. Just be humble enough to say, I don't know what it is about. I
right.
had some feeling when I was holding my hands in this position. I felt some very strong feeling of this and that. Mm-hmm. And I had a feeling it could be good for you to go to a doctor and let right. the doctor examine you or something like that. Mm-hmm. We are not doctors to make diagnoses. And I believe it's a kind of, some kind of my personal truth that Reiki isn't a diagnostic system.
Right, it's not.
Does that man, in my example with that Christian man with his mother in mm-hmm. the hospital, need to know what kind of a stroke she had?
No.
Did he need to know her diagnosis? No. He could say, "Dear Lord, you know what's going on with that lady. Please send her as much love and light as mm-hmm. You want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And let her take as much out of it as mm-hmm. She can.
Mm-hmm.
And we are all praying for her happiness and for your love."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if we look at the Reiki Konji, the name of the discipline,
yes,
there is this rain
yes.
going, falling down, and it's for me it's like the symbol of all the grace and love of God that
falls down.
And these three mouths in the old Konji, like we are praying for rain, and that's the essence of this discipline for me. Like, what am I doing when I am holding hands? I'm praying for the rain of the universe to be embodied in me and to manifest in this place mm-hmm. at this time, doing its work. And I'm making this connection between heaven and earth by doing this kind of work. Allowing this universe to do its work here and just doing what is really appropriate, not from my point of view, but from its point of view. And feeling bliss because of this oneness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And I think that's the essence of the discipline. If we really look at that and understand it, then many, many questions start being out of place.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That is gorgeous.
Thank you.
Well, listeners, you have a lot to think about this week. Thank you very much, Sadhu, for your words of wisdom and your wonderful stories.
You are welcome.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.